the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and Chris Prytower.
I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to Lifetime Planning.
And I'm Chris Prytower, and today's program is in response to a listener email. And this email is from David, who will be retiring at the end of this year. According to David, his income will be primarily Social Security and his investments, which consist of about $200,000 in cash and the funds from his company 401k program of about $900,000. His home is paid for, so he has no debt. But David's question has to do with where he should invest his money for income because he needs income to supplement the income he and his wife get from Social Security. Their combined Social Security would be around $36,000 next year. His expenses are roughly $80,000 a year. He and his wife, they're in good health and longevity runs on both sides of the family. But his concern is that the Fed is cutting interest rates and there's talk of a recession and bear market, so he doesn't want to lose his life savings. He's concerned that CDs and bonds pay very little, and the dividends in his bond funds keeps dropping. So where does he put his money? His wife now works part-time at Nordstrom, which could bring in close to $20,000 a year. But Jim, what would you advise David to do?
Not retire.
All right. Well, that concludes this episode.
No, seriously. David, from the information you've given me, is that your wife's part-time work in Social Security is roughly about $56,000 against your annual budget of $80,000. So you only need to get about $24,000 to meet your remaining needs, and that's roughly a return of 2.5% on your investments. Now, here's the issue you face. Sooner or later, we will have a recession and we will have a bear market. If not next year, maybe it's the year after. You don't want to go through what we call sequence risk, and that is lose maybe 30, 40% of your investments starting out your retirement. So my first advice is close to somewhere around the neighborhood of 60% of your portfolio should be in bonds. Now, you mentioned your bond funds have been lowering their dividends, and that's because as interest rates come down, as they get new money, they buy bonds with lower paying interest. So I would recommend individual bonds versus a bond fund because you're going to lock in your yield and you're not going to experience a decline in income as you presently are in your bond funds. Now, the yields on individual bonds range somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 to 5%, depending on credit quality and maturity. Now, these kind of yields should be more than enough to provide you with enough income and actually money left over. But if you are going to want to own equities, I would recommend instead of funds or ETFs, I'd recommend individual stocks where the dividend yields are actually higher. Number two, they're more predictable, especially with companies that have a history of raising dividends. We call them dividend aristocrats because they have a history of raising dividends every year over a 25-year period of time. You are going to need a stream of increasing income over the years, especially with rising medical costs, rising travel costs, and you mentioned that longevity runs on both sides of your family. So you're definitely going to need more income each year as you age. I can't think of a better way to protect yourself against inflationary costs than blue chip dividend paying stocks. And of course, David, over time, as you age, the dividend paying stocks in your portfolio should represent a greater portion of your portfolio over time. And especially as you get to what we call the no-go years, ages 85 and beyond.
David mentioned two concerns that he's going to be dealing with: falling interest rates and a possible bear market that comes along with a recession. And it's not just that David will have to be dealing with this, but many of our listeners may relate to this, whether they're retired or close to retirement.
Chris, it's actually more than just low interest rates and a possible recession and bear market. There's also going to be the issue of higher taxes and inflation. Two additional issues no one is talking about. And I really don't care if Trump gets reelected or it's a Democrat. I hate to tell you, with deficits as large as they are, 72% of government spending is on automatic pilot. I don't care who is in the White House or who controls Congress, your taxes are going to be going up. Now, the bond market has placed a giant bet that we're no longer going to have inflation. In other words, the death of inflation. Everyone is on the same side of the boat thinking inflation has been eradicated. I don't share that view, as do a number of some of the smartest people, at least I know. After the next recession, governments will have no choice but to use fiscal stimulus to revive the economy. I mean, just take a look at the Trump presidency. We got, what, $1.8 trillion in tax cuts. We got $300 billion of additional spending, and they just redid the budget with an additional $300 billion of spending. So they're going to have no choice but to use fiscal stimulus to revive the economy, and that's going to lead to massive government deficits. We've already exceeded $1 trillion this year, and the government fiscal year doesn't end to the end of the month. So monetary policy is no longer effective in revitalizing the economy, as we've learned in this last business recovery. Central bank policy is very effective in, for example, creating asset bubbles, but it's less effective in terms of igniting economic growth. So governments are going to use whatever means are possible to stimulate the economy, and that's going to lead to massive deficits. Now, if interest rates are to be kept low, that can only be accomplished by massive money printing. So inflation, in my opinion, is going to become an issue in the next decade for all investors, not just retirees, along with increased taxation.
Well, it's an important issue. And in fact, I know we've done shows in the past regarding favorable taxation of dividends compared to regular interest rates, which of course can be taxed at the highest tax bracket. So it's definitely important and worthy of further discussion.
Yeah. And like I said, the one thing that you're going to want and you're going to face is inflation and higher taxes. Now, I've covered this in past shows, but let me just mention it briefly. If you are single, the first $38,600 of dividends are taxed at 0%. That's right. You pay zero taxes. If you're married, that figure is $77,200. Now, if you are fortunate enough to have a portfolio that creates more than $38,000 or $77,000, the next $400,000 is taxed at roughly 15%. So if you think about it, your income is taxed anywhere from a 0% to 15% versus the top tax rate is 37%. And when it sunsets in 2025, that's assuming President Trump gets reelected, he would keep his plan in place. But if a Democrat gets in, they're talking about 70% tax rates. Dividends are more favorable from an investment and tax point of view. And the reason I prefer individual dividend paying stocks are threefold. Number one, the dividends are higher. Number two, if you look at what we call dividend aristocrats, it's very predictable. They raise their dividends every single year and have a history of doing so over a 25-year period. And number three, they're taxed at 0 to 15 to 20% depending on one's income level. Individual dividend stocks deal with two issues future investors are going to be dealing with, which is inflation and higher taxes.
Well, one issue that I think really needs to be addressed here, Jim, what happens if we go in a bear market and stock indexes fall maybe as much as 30 to 40%, like in a typical bear market? But if a bear market lies ahead, should an investor wait until after the bear market before they do invest in blue chip stocks?
You know, first of all, in the bottom of a bear market, Chris, think back to, let's say, March of 2009, where there were predictions of a depression, there were predictions another crash was on the way. When things look this gloomy and the media overdramatizes how bad things are, I know of very few investors, including professionals, that have the courage or the knowledge to jump in to buy stocks at depressed prices. Now, when it comes to investing, most investors buy only when stocks are going up and usually at record levels. And we can see this with, if you listen to the weekend program, a lot of our technicians, one in particular, John Kosar, follows fund flows. And usually when the market is going straight up, money goes into stock funds. When the market is going down, money goes out. So investors react emotionally. And that is the first point. The second point is you are buying these companies for the dividend yield and for the dividend increases. Now, if you sell those stocks, you're not going to capture increasing income over time because you won't own them. The other issue you create, your own bear market, when you sell stocks and you have to pay capital gains, which can run anywhere from 0 to 37%, depending on whether the stock was held long or short term and your income bracket. Then on top of that, if you live in states like I do in California, which has the highest income taxes, then you have to pay state taxes on your capital gains. So you could lose anywhere from 15 to 50%, depending on your income, the state you live in, and whether your capital gains are long or short term.
And I know that within our own firm, Jim, what you do personally, you own blue chip aristocrats and you hold them long term, just like Buffett owns the stocks he owns. In fact, he very rarely ever sells them. He's famous for that. But would you say that that's pretty similar to what the two of you are doing?
Well, I mean, you know, I've done this. I mean, I fell in love with the stock market in graduate school when I took my first investment course. And back then, Chris, the emphasis was on dividends, and I'm going to get to the history of dividends that are going to surprise a lot of our listeners. But I have two stock portfolios. One is a high dividend stock portfolio with the stocks, and this portfolio, they pay higher dividends ranging from 4 to 6%. I call this my stock bond portfolio. The dividend increases are anywhere from 3, 5, 6% a year, but primarily I call this kind of like my bond substitute. And the stocks in this portfolio all pay high dividends. And because my tax bracket, they're taxed at a fraction of my regular tax bracket. Dividends are taxed more favorably. The other portfolio is made up of high growth stocks. They all pay dividends, but those dividends are growing by over 10% a year. That is what I call my growth portfolio. But outside of two stocks that I own, I don't buy a stock, Chris, unless it pays a dividend. I have found over my investment career that dividend-paying stocks have, number one, better corporate governance. Number two, you can't manipulate dividends the way companies can manipulate earnings. So it's no different than owning investment real estate. I mean, if you think about it, if you were to buy a rental property or investment real estate, a commercial building, a warehouse, you buy it for the rents they produce. That's what makes the property valuable. And it's the same to me with stocks. I invest in companies for the dividend growth potential, and eventually, as companies continue to raise dividends, the stock price eventually follows. So there are three components of dividend stocks: the dividend you receive now, the dividend growth rate, in other words, what the increase is each year, and third, the capital gains.
If we do go through a recession or a bear market, Jim, you just hold your stocks and don't sell them, but is there any reason that would cause you to sell a stock?
Oh, sure. I mean, there's several reasons. One is the danger of a dividend cut. Think of bank stocks during the financial crisis. They all eliminated their dividends. Think of companies like General Electric, probably one of the longest stalwarts to the Dow. And they recently, last year, got kicked out of the Dow. They eliminated their dividend. So the danger of a dividend cut, or number two, the company stops increasing their dividends. In other words, it remains stagnant. But outside of those two issues, I own them because I'm interested, just like a real estate investor, in an increasing stream of dividends. I like knowing that every year I get a pay increase and my income is going up each year, which enables me to better cope with inflation over the long run.
Well, I think one issue that investors don't realize is that if you do own an individual blue chip dividend paying aristocrat, the stock price may drop in a market correction or bear market, but that really doesn't change the dividend, does it?
No, and I've often told the story of Coca-Cola, and I'm going to tell a different story today. But even with Coca-Cola lost a third of its value during the bear market between 2007 and 2009. But during those 3 years, Coke's dividend went up 24%. So not only did you receive a dividend during the bear market, but that dividend went up 7 to 8% every year during the crisis. And here's the great thing. When the bull market resumed in the spring of 2009, you regain back all the loss by the end of the year. And that's what happens generally in the bear market. Portfolio managers are a little skittish. The dividend yields are higher because stock prices went down. The first area that investors gravitate, whether professionals or individuals, is these high dividend paying blue chip. Because remember, we just went through a bear market and a recession. People aren't really risk prone at this point. So these are the go-to stocks when you come out of a bear market. So if you did nothing and did not panic when the stock price of Coke went down, you got a pay increase of 7 to 8% each year. Your income did not change. It actually went up every single year during the entire financial crisis. Now, had you sold, you would have actually have experienced an actual bear market that would not have been recoverable in the form of federal and state income taxes. This is one of the reasons, and you've heard him on the weekend show, legendary technician Ralph Ancampora basically sits on his blue chip stocks and holds them through thick and thin. And here's a guy that predicts the recession. We had him on the program at the end of August in 2018, and he said basically he saw trouble ahead for the markets, and that's exactly what happened. We got a 20% correction in the fourth quarter. But as Ralph mentioned in that interview, he said, you know what? I just sit on these stocks, and it's one of the reasons I own the farm, and I'm not the cow on the farm. So let me put this in a different perspective. I want to illustrate this point with an example of 10 blue chip stocks from the Dow Industrials, because you know most individuals are familiar with the companies that make up the Dow. And what I did is I chose at random 10 companies. I chose Exxon, Cisco, IBM, Coca-Cola, Procter & Gamble, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, 3M, Walmart, and Disney. So different sectors, different industries. And what I did is I went back to 2010, and I looked at what these companies paid in dividends. In 2010, these 10 companies paid $13.41. By 2019, this year, those same companies paid a collective dividend of $30.59. Now, that's an increase of 128% over a 10-year period. Now, given the average time spent in retirement of roughly about 25 years, that would mean a tenfold increase in your income at the end of 25 years. And Chris, I can think of no better way to keep pace with inflation than high-quality blue-chip aristocrat companies that have a 25-year history of increasing their income every single year. It doesn't matter if you're in a bear market or a recession. Just like I mentioned, Coca-Cola, a lot of these companies did the same thing. Even Exxon, during the crisis of 2007 to 2008, they increased their dividend. During the downturn in oil prices that began in 2014 and really got down to 2016 when prices of oil went from over $100 a barrel down to $26, and Exxon increased their dividend every single year.
Well, I think investors mistakenly think that when stocks go down, and whether in a correction or a bear market, that their income goes down. So they're afraid to own or hold on to stocks as they get older because they have the perception that risk gets elevated.
Well, I mean, the risk of income going down is probably more applicable to a mutual fund or ETF because managers of those funds may be forced to sell stocks during a downturn or a correction as investors withdraw funds in a panic. But if I own a blue chip stock that pays me a dividend, has a history of paying dividends, Chris, that doesn't change when the stock price falls. In fact, the yield becomes higher for new investors as they pay a lower price to get the same dividend. Quite honestly, I love it when stock prices go down because I'm reinvesting all the dividends in the shares that I own. So I'm dividend reinvesting. So when the stock goes down, whatever dividend I reinvest, I buy more shares. And I want to emphasize the importance of dividends and total returns when it comes to investing in the stock market, because this is often forgotten, especially during the 90s when everybody was focusing on growth, and also in this last decade with a lot of the tech companies. A number of years ago, three professors from the London School of Economics, they wrote a book called Triumph of the Optimist. Now, what they did is they studied 16 stock markets over a 100-year period. And this is a quote from a book. A U.S. equity portfolio, which started life in New York City in 1900 with a $1 investment, would have ended the year 2000 with a value of $198 without reinvestment of dividends. Now listen to what I'm going to tell you next from the same book. This represents a compound return of 5.4% a year. Pretty respectable. Here's the catch. If dividends were reinvested, that same $1 in 1900 grew to 16,000 $797 by the end of the year 2000. This represents a 10.1% annualized return, or it was 85 times larger. Whenever you hear advisors or the media throw out that number 10% on the stock market longer term, they are talking not just about growth, but they're talking about those dividends. So according to the study, and this is very important for those that are retired, the longer the horizon, time horizon, the more important is the dividend income. And I can't think of anything more that supports the reasons for owning high-quality dividend stocks for retirees that will spend roughly about 25 years in retirement, which is why they belong in every retiree or pre-retiree's portfolio. The longer you own them, the better your returns are over the long run as you experience annual dividend increases every year. But I want to emphasize individual stocks versus mutual funds. Now, we're entering a very unusual period in history, as we have covered this on weekend shows, where the interest on bonds and cash remains unusually low, and the yield on stocks are starting to rise above bond yields. Right now, the yield on the S&P is closer to 2%. The 10-year Treasury is backed up to about 1.7%. Now, believe it or not, folks, that was a world that existed between the 1930s and the 1960s. It may be hard to believe, but in 1950, listen to what I'm going to tell you, the average yield on stocks was 7.2%. Now, by the end of the year 2000, the yield did drop to 1.1% on the S&P. That world is changing again and reverting to the world of the 1930s, where stock yields will exceed bond yields as they do presently. For investors seeking predictable income that goes up each year, there's no better place, in my opinion, than dividend-paying stocks for the long run.
And we do want to announce some important new changes to the program that we're gradually going to implement. First, we're changing the name to Lifetime Planning from Lifetime Income, which reflects listener responses that we cover more topics than just retirement. And also, the first Monday of each month, we're going to feature a program we call Millennial Monday to reflect issues that tend to concern younger adults. The program will feature other advisors from Financial Sense on a wide variety of topics. Also, we're going to be adding a call-in feature where you, the listener, can call in with a question, and your call and question will be answered on the air. Jim is also going to begin a new series on business planning that will cover things that are important planning-wise for running your own business, so that when that time comes, you're able to sell your business when you want, for the money you need, to the person or company that you choose. All of these changes are a reflection of listener feedback, so we're very excited to be making these changes. We hope you'll find them helpful to your own lifetime planning, whether you're a millennial just starting out, nearing retirement, retired, or maybe even starting your own business. But we do thank all of you for your valuable feedback. And then on tomorrow's edition of Lifetime Planning, we do have Michael Robinson, and he's from the Blueprint Insurance Services. He will be discussing annuities, and if you think annuities have gotten a bad rap, this would be a good episode for you to listen to. He goes through a number of unique benefits that can really help you out later in life.
In the meantime, on behalf of Chris Prytower and myself, we'd like to thank you for listening to Lifetime Planning. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.